We've been talking about for the last couple of weeks what the gospel really is. And I want to just begin by saying, I think we've sold the gospel short. I think I have sold the gospel short because I always looked at 1 Corinthians, the 15th chapter, and especially that first part of the 15th chapter, where the Apostle Paul talks about how Jesus died, was buried, and was raised. And I kind of took that as being a limit on the gospel. And I really think that I've missed something very important by not reading the entirety of the 15th chapter as part of the gospel, because I think that's why Paul has written it the way that he did. Death, burial, and resurrection, undeniably so important. And we came together this morning so we could remember Jesus' death on the cross. We think about his resurrection every Sunday when we come together on the first day of the week. That's the day that he was raised from the dead. And we think about what he's doing for us now. We talked about last week how important it is that in Jesus, we'll all be made alive. We will all be a part of that resurrection. And that's a part of the gospel. What a great blessing that is. We know about death. It came through Adam. We no longer have access to the tree of life. Adam lost that for all of mankind. He didn't make us sinners. We sin by ourselves. But because of what Adam did, we lost access to the tree of life. Jesus gives that back in the resurrection. And when Jesus returns, this is the part of the resurrection, or the part of the gospel that we're going to talk about today. When Jesus returns, he says he's going to deliver the kingdom back to God the Father after he has destroyed all dominion and authority and power. That's the 24th verse here in 1 Corinthians 15. Don't stop reading after the death, burial, and resurrection. Continue to read in 1 Corinthians 15. We look forward to a time when Jesus delivers the kingdom back to God. It's the heart, really, of the gospel story. This kingdom that we get to be a part of. You know, I have sold the kingdom short, like I sold the gospel short, I think, because I always talked about the kingdom as being synonymous with the church. And in some sense, that's true, but that doesn't really reflect everything that we should be thinking about when we think about the kingdom. It's not a building. It's not even just the people that make up the church. Kingdom is an embracing term. It refers to the king's rule, the king's reign. And that's kind of an abstract idea. And when I say it's abstract, let me explain that just a little bit. There are some concrete things that are easy for us to grasp. We can think about this group of people, and we can say, this group of people is the kingdom. That's easy for me to wrap my head around. Abstract things are a little bit difficult. Kingdom is kind of like talking about a person's office. So I think about my office. I come here every day and I sit in my office right here behind the baptistry, and I can reflect on what I'm going to say in the Bible classes that I teach, in the sermons that I talk about on Sundays. That's, in a sense, when I talk about my office, That's my office right back there. It's a concrete thing. It's a place. It's easy to understand. It's a little bit harder when I say my office is to be an evangelist. That's my role. That's my job. That's different from the place where I do my role. Think about the presidency. I don't know if you've ever been to Washington, D.C., or you've been to any of the presidential libraries, but they always have a replica of the Oval Office. It's a great, beautiful place to work, but that's not what's really important about the presidency. Not really important about his role. His role is much broader than that. It's his responsibility. We think about the office of elder, and we have an office that belongs to the elders. It's over here in this corner. But that's not what's really important. What's really important is the role. So when we think about the kingdom, I want to think a little bit about the rule that God exercises, his role, his responsibility. So let's do that this morning. You know, God is reigning right now. I don't know if you've ever had people come to your door and they say, wouldn't you like to live in a time when God reigns, when the lion lies down with the lamb, when there is no sorrow, when there are no tears? God is doing that right now. It's hard for us to wrap our heads around that, but I got to be with my brother-in-law this last week, and thank you for giving me the time that I could go and do that. I got to be with Mark, who is facing death, and he faces death in a way that is kind of like Paul in 2 Timothy, the 4th chapter. It's knowing that we have lived our lives as a part of God's rule. Yes, he's in pain, and he deals with that pain, and it's some days unrelenting, but he knows that God reigns, and he knows that in that reign, there is no death. There is no sorrow. There are no tears. Our time together was not an especially tearful time because of what we know about God's reign. Now, at this point, today, the 21st century, God is reigning through Jesus. This is what 2 Timothy, the 2nd chapter at verse 5 reminds us of. There is one God, there is one mediator between God and mankind, the man Jesus Christ. So Jesus is now the embodiment of God's reign. That's the way it should be. But Jesus came as a human. He took on human form. He was entirely like us. And when he came, he was coming to reestablish God's reign. You see, people had lost track of the idea that God was, in fact, reigning. Jesus came to reestablish that. Now, we could talk about all of the things that happened in the Old Testament, how God was reigning in Jerusalem. The people decided that they wanted to have a king. They wanted to have something concrete. They couldn't deal with the abstract, and so God gave them a king. That was never God's intention. God's intention was that he would be the king. So he gave them a king. And in a sense, those kings operated like Jesus operates now. They were supposed to be God's people. Well, Jesus, in a very special sense, is God's mediator. In John, the first chapter, this is the way John explains all of this. Turn with me, John, the first chapter. I'm going to read from the New International Translation, long reading, but it's important. In the beginning, John says, was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. Before Jesus came here, he was in heaven having the form of God, having everything about God. But he says, though he was with God in the beginning, though through him all things were made, that nothing was made that has been made without him, in him was life. It was in God. That life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness. And the darkness does not overcome it. The King James translation says that the light was shining in the darkness and the darkness could not comprehend the light. Well, it's a good word, and I don't mean to denigrate that idea, but really the point is darkness can't overcome light. Darkness cannot put out light. If you light a match, no matter how dark the room is, the darkness cannot overcome the light that comes from that single match. I went down to the bottom of Mammoth Cave. I wasn't way down in the bottom of Mammoth Cave, but I went down into Mammoth Cave. We got far enough in that the guy turned off the light. And when he turned off the light and there was no light, darkness ruled. Dark like you can't believe. Ask Ted, he was there. You can put your hand right in front of your face and you cannot see because it's dark. Dark can rain, but you light just a single match. And our guide did that, lit a single match. And suddenly, darkness is banished. Darkness cannot overcome light. Light can overcome darkness, but darkness cannot overcome light. And that's what John said. Jesus came into the world. The darkness of this world tried to put him out, but it could not. Jesus is. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. John the Baptist was not the light. He came as a witness to the light, the true light that gives light to everyone coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him. The world didn't recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but even his own did not receive him. He came to the Jews. They had heard about the light, but when he came, they didn't receive it. Did it put it out? Did it stop Jesus? No. To all that did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The marvelous thing is the Word became flesh, dwelt among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father full of grace and truth. Grace and truth exists in this world the apostle said in Colossians, the second chapter, in Christ, all the fullness of the deity lives in bodily form. We could see God. He stepped into our world in a way that could not be overcome. And then he was killed. He was buried. He rose again. And the marvelous part of the gospel is that he is now reigning beside God. His reign could not be stopped. The Romans thought they could. The Jews thought they could. Evil men thought they could. Satan thought they could. But they could not stop his reign. Daniel, the seventh chapter, beginning at verse 1, Daniel tells the story of what happened in the first year of Belshazzar, the king of Babylon. He had a dream. Visions passed through his mind as he was laying on his bed. He wrote down the substance of his dream. And this is what it was. Daniel said, "In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me were the four winds of heaven churning up the great sea. Four great beasts, each different from the others, came up out of the sea. The first was like a lion, had the wings of an eagle. I watched until its wings were torn off. It was lifted from the ground so that it stood up on 2 feet like a human being, and the mind of a human was given to it. There before me was a second beast that looked like a bear. It was raised up on one of its sides and had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. It was told, 'Get up and eat your fill of flesh.' After that I looked, there was before me another beast, one that looked like a leopard. On its back it had 4 wings like those of a bird. The beast had 4 heads. It was given authority to rule. After that, my night vision, I looked, and before me was a 4th beast, terrifying, frightening, and very powerful. It had large iron teeth. It crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. It was different from the 4 former beasts. It had 10 horns. When I was thinking about the horns, there came up another horn, a little one, which came up among them, and the first of the 3 horns were uprooted before it. This horn had eyes like the eyes of a human being and a mouth that spoke blasphemy. I looked. The thrones were set in place. The Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow. The hair of his head was white like wool. His throne was flaming with fire, its wheels all ablaze. A river of fire was flowing, coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands attended him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated. The books were opened. I continued to watch because of the boastful words the horn was speaking. I kept looking until the beast was slain. Body destroyed, thrown into the blazing fire. The other beasts had been stripped of their authority, but they were allowed to live for a period of time. My vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man, coming with the clouds of heaven. Daniel says, in this dream, I was in the throne room of God. And what I saw was someone coming in the cloud, like coming with the clouds of heaven. Now, let me stop there for just a minute and let me refresh your memory. Remember what happened after Jesus was killed, was buried, was raised, and was with the apostles for 40 days. You remember what happened? Acts, the first chapter. The apostles were looking, and all of a sudden, Jesus was taken up. He left the earth. He was covered with clouds as he left the earth. So Daniel is now telling us what that looked like from heaven's perspective. Here comes one with clouds. That's Jesus. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language worshiped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away. Remember what happened to the beasts? They were destroyed. Some of them got to live for a little while longer, but they'll be destroyed. Jesus comes to the Ancient of Days. He's given a kingdom and power, dominion that is never destroyed. His kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. His rule never ends. God will not always rule through this mediator, though. Jesus came here, established his kingdom, brought us back to God. He now rules. But one day, that's going to change. That's 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 24. That's part of the gospel. The mediator's mission has been completed. Sin is no more. Death is no more. All things are of God. And when that happens, he will reign with Jesus. When that happens, we will reign with Jesus at the Father's side. Look at Romans, the 8th chapter, at verse 17. If we're children, that's talking about us. If we're children, then we're heirs. That's the gospel. We're heirs of God. We're co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in his sufferings, in order that we may also share in his glory. Oh, yes. Now we have to deal with suffering. Now we have to deal with death. It hasn't been destroyed yet. But one day, the apostle said in 2 Timothy, the 2nd chapter, if we endure, we will reign with him. So God, one day, reigns. Jesus, having defeated every authority, every dominion, everything that stands against him, lets us reign with him. Boy, do I look for that day. I can't wait. My friends, that's the gospel. Do you want to have a part of that? Then put on Jesus. Become a child. You do that in baptism. Jesus puts the old man to death. You become a new creature. You're one of his people. And if you endure, you can reign with him. Now, we have difficulty with that. All of us know what it's like to lose our grip periodically on this great benefit. And we sin. We leave God and we decide we're going to go back to what we were. But James said, confess your faults one to another, pray one for another that you may be healed. And the reason for that is, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. If you're ready to put on Jesus in baptism, to become one of his children, to look forward to this reign with Christ, we can help you do that. And if you have not endured, then return to God.